Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper. And baby, we are lacking the third man in the booth. We have the traveling man, Ronnie Martin. So
he's in the Windy City right now. That's what I hear.
One of the things that was weird about the last couple of months is the lack of travel that Ron did. I feel like it must have really like killed him just to be like at home in Ashland for like 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time.
He's so glad the holidays are over and he can get back to his world tour, his middle America world tour.
Yeah, every weekend. That's right. Do you know what he's doing in Chicago? Do you know if this is this like hipster sojourn stuff or is this the other thing?
Chicago doesn't strike me as a hipster sojourn city. It's I don't know what it is. I'm going to guess it's more denominational, but I'm pulling that out of thin air. I don't really know.
Like EV free stuff, maybe. Exactly. So we're looking at like khakis and golf shirts as opposed to,
I mean, Chicago has hipsters in it, but it's not a bastion of hipsterdom in general. There are some neighborhoods, but I wouldn't have guessed that for,
I don't think of it as a manifestly hipster environment.
What's the most hipster, like not what is the most hipster city in general? Cause that's like Portland or Austin or something like that. But if hipster pastors were going to do a pastor's conference, what's their city?
Man, that's a really good question.
I feel something like, I don't know, like Mobile, Alabama or something like.
Kind of sneaky, like a little bit under the radar.
Omaha, maybe, just sort of these cities that are like, they're cooler than you think, but nobody knows it yet. Although I don't know if Mobile is actually a cool city, but it's off the radar. So it might be, I don't know.
Dude, I think Mobile is a cool city, personally. I mean, you got the Gulf right there. That's
And it's Alabama, not Florida, so it doesn't have quite the same sort of cachet or the tourist appeal in that way.
Now, Alabama strikes me as like probably the least hipster state in the union. If you're just going top to bottom, the state of Alabama.
I feel like Mississippi might be offended that you said that, but.
That's true.
But the thing is, they're two states. Well, I think Mississippi might be less hipster because, at least Birmingham is a real city.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like Mississippi doesn't even have any real cities. It just has.
There's probably a hipster community in Birmingham. You know what Mississippi town I'm going to check out in a couple of weeks? I actually have a conference in Oxford, Mississippi.
Oh, that's is that Ole Miss that's there?
Yeah, home of Ole Miss, which I don't think of as hipster either. I just think of it as like...
No, that's like...
Yeah, the swoopy-haired, chinless, affluent bow tie.
Right, that's the one where they like dress up in formal Sunday wear to go to football games, which explains why their football team stinks.
So it'll be interesting to see if there is any hipster like community there in Oxford, Miss. But so I'm excited. I'm actually looking forward.
A year and a half ago, I went to Tupelo, Mississippi, which is... It's like the birthplace of Elvis, and they have a little museum, which is he was literally born in a shed or a house. Well, it's a house, but it's about the size of a shed. And Tupelo is another one of those cities where it's like, it used to be just sort of the old Southern Main Street town, but now they have like craft cookie shops and a sneaky little art and music scene. And it's just sort of how did that happen in Tupelo? I don't know. But
Tupelo is kind of sneaky nice, man. I like it. I've been there a couple times.
So hipsters, if you're looking for a place to do a pastor's conference, there you go. There's a couple ideas.
Dude, and if it was Tupelo, like Pipe and I would probably drive to. Yeah. You could probably get us to speak at it.
For sure. And it's not very far, especially from you, because you're on the way.
Dude, it's close for me. It's like an hour and a half, 2 hours from me, something like that. So Pipe, speaking of hipsters, we have two new sponsors, and I don't know anything about these books that you're about to promote.
You're just assuming that the authors are hipsters.
Well, that was my question. I want you to kind of rank for me on a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being Donald Trump, 10 being Sufjan Stevens. This is our hipster spectrum. Where do these authors rank, man? What are we looking at? Are we looking at hipsters or non-hipsters?
Oh, these are utter non-hipsters, like complete and total non-hipsters, which is. No offense to hipsters, but that's a real breath of fresh air. And the books are not hipstery at all either, in terms of what they are. So the sponsor is Nav Press and Tyndale House, that joint effort again. And the first one is called Meals from Mars. And it's by a guy whose last name I'm probably going to butcher, but his name's Ben Siaka or Siaka. It sounds a little bit like sciatica.
Yeah.
Also Gattaca, as long as we're just rolling on these things. But So he is, let me make sure I have my notes in the right order. I'm not introducing the wrong author. Ben is the executive director of Restoration Academy and has been for like 15 or 17 years. And that is a school that provides Christian education to urban youth in Birmingham, Alabama, the city we were just talking about. I have an affinity for him. I've never met him, but he's a Wheaton grad, so he must be awesome. And has a math.
Dude, what year did he graduate from Wheaton?
Well, let's see. If he's been in Birmingham for 17 years, it's longer ago than that. So probably mid-90s.
Was he okay? So he was there before.
Right, he was before me. Yeah, I don't know him. I'm sure you know the Wheaton fraternity is small enough. I'm sure I know people who know him, but.
Sure.
The book, it's...
Dude, is it even special to be like an author from Wheaton? I feel like every kid from Wheaton gets a book deal.
Well, if they don't, you know, if they don't get a book deal, they make a lot of money selling financial services. So,
you're sort of
in the ministry or creative side of things, or you go work with rich people's money.
You buy and sell people. That's
right. Yeah. Well, you buy and sell people's assets, which basically means you own them.
Absolutely.
This guy obviously went the ministry route. And so the book is Meals from Mars. And it's a novel that is kind of in the vein of same kind of different as me in terms of it's a story about a white man from the suburbs who encounters a black man from the hood at a gas station. And for whatever reason, they get stranded overnight. And that mm-hmm. creates the context in which their prejudices, their fears, and their whatever – you know, all of those, the racial divide essentially gets confronted. And so the idea is, it's allegorical, I guess, in a sense, or just sort of one of those, it's not sneaky. It's very obvious what this thing is. Yeah. It's not sort of like, hey, the subtle themes of this are race. It's like, no, this is about race.
This is a race
book.
But
it's a book that uses a story to help people encounter the real life engagement of this. And so Ben, having been in an environment where he's a white suburban guy who's now served in the city for all these years, is kind of in a unique position to do this. And so I, you know, haven't had a chance to read it yet. This is just one the publisher sent us, but I'm actually very interested in this one. And I say actually, because that's not true of every book we do a promo for. So Meals from Mars is the title. It's available now. Came out first week in February. And it is a parable of prejudice and providence. And so
this guy's not a hipster. I'm surprised.
No, like he's a, I'm looking at his picture right now. He's got a shaved head and he's got a t-shirt that's, you know, it's got some script and some print on it. He just looks like a guy who is himself, which is really refreshing.
What's the guy's name? I'm going to look him up.
Ben Siaka, S-C-I-A-C-C-A.
Ben Siaka.
Yeah. And Ben, if you listen to this podcast and I butchered your name, I'm really sorry.
Let us know, Ben. Let us know how to say
it. The other thing is, so for some of our listeners who are familiar with more of the broader reform movement, he has contributed to the Reformed African American Network and been on their podcast before. So that, like Jamar Tisby and some other guys oversee that. And it's a really, they do some really good work in terms of racial reconciliation and racial sort of cultural commentary from a pretty profoundly theological perspective. So that's a world he has a foot in as well, if that's something that means anything to any of our listeners. So a little bit of a recommendation there as well.
Dude, you know, he doesn't look hipster, but have you seen his Twitter photo?
No, I was just looking on the, the one that was on the Reformed African American Network site.
Dude, yeah, the Twitter photo, he's got like a flat-brimmed hat, like a sort of cocked at a jaunty angle. He almost looks like he could be remember like Rick Barry's kids who played in the NBA?
Yeah.
He looks like he could be one of Rick Barry's kids.
I love that you call them Rick Barry's kids when their names are Brent and John. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he does look like he could be that, or yeah, possibly a you know, somebody who tried to make it in Christian hip-hop and then moved into ministry.
He looks like a white guy who can dunk, which maybe he addresses that in the book.
Yeah, and in the other picture I was looking at, you can see a little bit, like you can see him like chest up, and he seems to have an athletic build.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's call him the white guy who can dunk. I think that's fair, you know?
I think that's fair. I would love to be known as that. You know, of all the things I'm known for, I'd love to be known as that. That would be
nice. That was true of me for about a 6-month stretch when I was a senior in high school, and And it was one of those kind of dunks that it was, let's call it a WNBA dunk, not a,
Hey, but it's still a
yeah,
dunk.
I mean, yeah, I can always hang my hat on that.
Dude, wasn't learning to dunk like one of the most exciting things that ever happened to you? I feel like it was for me.
Yeah. Like the three times that I actually succeeded at it were, it may be the pinnacle of my athletic career, which tells you something about my life since then.
It feels so amazing. It just feels really good, yeah, man.
I mean, and I'm 6'2", and so it's not like I'm not a super tall guy who didn't have to jump at all, but neither am I like a 5'9" guy who's got bounce. So
yeah, I'm 6'2" also. I feel like it's an accomplishment for us to dunk. Yeah. You know? It's no
thing. No, I mean, and my friends will say it never happened, but it actually did. I did succeed at it two or three times. And
I believe,
but it was like just get the ball over the rim and like flick the rim with your fingers kind of dunk, not like throw it down. Sorry. I wish I could have.
Dude, I learned to dunk like right toward the end of my junior year of high school, and it was right around prom time. And I remember we had after prom at like a YMCA. Uh-huh. And I remember my buddy Russell and I, we kind of ditched our dates, these poor girls. And we found just like a practice gym with a bunch of volleyballs in it and dunked all night.
Yeah.
Like our hands were all mangled up from the rims, but it was the funnest night.
Yeah, man. I could dunk a volleyball with a little more authority. The basketball was tough, but yeah, no. So yeah, like, yeah, yeah. So you're like dunking in tuxes, or did you go change into not tux?
Dude, no, we changed, man. We ditched the tuxes and the dates, and we just dunked in a practice.
I was just picturing like ponytail, like the vest with the little cinch in the back, and your little crappy clip on bow tie, and like throwing it down.
Yeah. All of that is true except for the ponytail. I didn't have that in high school. I had the like shaven headed football neck.
Yes. Yeah. Got you. Yeah. You were like a true fullback.
Oh yeah, man. Yeah. Like I would wear a neck roll in real life if I could, you know, not just on.
I used a neck roll because I was like 190 pounds and really wanted to look like I was 210.
Dude, right. It made you look bigger.
Yeah. Well, absolutely. It made me look like I had a tumor on my neck, but it was close.
Dude. Do we have another book, man?
We do. It's that. So that was one, Meals from Mars. Go check that out. The other one is called Killing Us Softly, which is that like a Phil Collins song or something? I feel like.
Dude, no. It was, I think it was the Fugees. Okay. Remember? Killing me softly with his song.
Oh, yes. Am I right? Yeah. Yeah. Yep. I feel like Phil Collins, that was a terrible pull. But yes, the Fugees is right.
Dude, it could be Phil Collins. I mean, Phil Collins could do a version
when I
of that.
See the word softly, I just associate it with Phil Collins.
Dude, seriously, that's a pretty
it's
safe
It's more of an atmospheric thing than it is any, you know, anything actually to do with his lyrics. Because I don't know any Phil Collins songs off the top of my head. But so this is by Ephraim Smith, who is also very much not a hipster. Uh-huh. His, if you look.
Hipster name, though.
Well, yeah, except that he's like a 40-something or 50-something black guy who's super sharp in a suit. So,
yeah, if that was on like a 25-year-old white guy, it'd be a totally hipster name.
And he'd be totally unlikable. But in this context, it sounds completely trustworthy. So he's a pastor and works in community development and a whole bunch of other things. But the idea of the book is that we're commanded to lay down our lives as Christians. So we take up the cross, we lay down our life. But the idea behind it is that this death is not sort of a tragic loss as much as it is a gentle giving up of a thing to take on the Holy Spirit. And so, but also just looking at sort of the counterintuitive nature of Christianity, that life is lived through dying, which, you know, a book that's written well on this is really helpful because we live in we do a very upside down thing as Christians. And I think as culture around us pushes back against Christianity and the gospel so much, more and more it seems obvious to me just how crazy it is what we believe. And so this book, Killing Us Softly by Ephraim Smith, would be encouraging at the very least and probably really, really helpful. And the other thing is he's a guy who, as far as I know, everything I've ever heard about him, he walks it out very well in terms of his ministry and the impact he's had on people. So Killing Us Softly by Ephraim Smith. The subtitle is Reborn in the Upside Down Image of God. Also available first week in February. So go get it now. Thank you to Nav Press and Tyndale for sponsoring the podcast.
Man, two new sponsors. Business is good for us, buddy.
Yeah, no, we're doing all right. And, we buried the lead. Did you get anything in the mail this past week that changed your life?
Oh, my goodness, dude. Did I get anything in the mail that changed my life? Of course I did. I have an apology to make. All right. And this is a written apology. It's a statement that I had my PR intern write for me. The statement is, Missionalware, I apologize. If you felt hurt by my passive aggressive words on this very program. So just to lay it out for listeners, Pipe, we spent many, many months waiting by our mailboxes to get a box of gear from Missionalware. And I'm ashamed to say, I spent a lot of time on this very same program being passive aggressive about it and being kind of a jerk about it. Now, when I got the box, I was so happy because all of this amazing swag that they had designed for us with our logos, it was right there, and it was every bit as magnificent as I had envisioned that it would be. So we got, what did we get, man? We got a Yeti mug that retails for like $86.
We got some pint glasses, coffee mug.
Yeah, we got pint glasses, a really amazing coffee mug.
Moleskin. Yeah, I mean, it's, and oh, that, I had high hopes for the Yeti.
Yeah.
It's better than my hopes.
Dude, the Yeti is magnificent. Pipe, I couldn't agree more. That thing is like it feels like a Cadillac Escalade.
Here's the thing, like, you know, it doesn't feel like, you know, sometimes those feel a little bit like tin cans. This thing feels like, it feels like cast iron, but doesn't weigh 42 pounds. Like, I feel like if somebody attacked me and I was holding this thing, I would just brain them. It doubles as a self-defense weapon. It's amazing.
It's a weapon. It keeps your drink
and
hot,
it holds
cold,
like 58 ounces. I can put almost an entire pot of coffee in it.
Oh, dude, the thing's gigantic. It's amazing. It's a Rolls Royce. You know, it's a Rolls Royce. So you can get your own, Happy Rant branded gear. You can get a Happy Rant branded mug from Missionalware. Missionalware.com. These guys are great. We've buried the hatchet. We're best friends now. They're coming over to my house to watch the Super Bowl.
We're working on additional business ventures with them. So, I mean, there's a bit of a lull in conversations while we had to work through some of these things. But conversations are advancing on further work with them. So, yes, hatchet is definitely buried.
Hatchet buried. It was business awkward. It wasn't real awkward. It was just business.
No actual hatred. Just sort of, just finalizing the details on these agreements is just a little tricky sometimes.
Well, dude, let's talk a little bit more about business, man. I'm glad you mentioned that, because as we were doing our show prep, our production meeting, which consists of one or two texts sent between each other this afternoon, you mentioned something that I want to talk about, and it's this this idea of signing your own books in a Barnes & Noble.
Yes.
And your parenthetical was like John Acuff regularly tweets about. And dude, I want to know about this because I don't know anything about it. But am I to believe that this guy like goes into a Barnes & Noble and signs his own books? Are you kidding me?
So like,
this is a thing?
Yeah, I don't know if other authors do this or not. He's the one I see do it. I'm assuming others do. So he tweeted, he'd probably once or twice a month tweets this. So I saw some a couple days ago. He's like, hey, residents of X and such city. I don't remember where he was, but let's call it Atlanta, Georgia. Signed all the copies of my book in this Barnes & Noble. Go get them. And I was thinking about it, and I was like, if I walked into a Barnes & Noble and just started writing in a book, even if it was – well, first of all, I wish Barnes & Noble carried my books. One Barnes & Noble carried one of my books for like a week, and it was the one that's 5 minutes from where I live. So they were just –
Dude, did you go and see it? You made a special trip?
Absolutely.
I don't blame you.
I went and looked for it. I snapped a picture of it. I took some extra copies and covered up like T.D. Jakes and Joel Osteen books with it. I mean, I moved some to the front of the store. They had like five or six copies. So I'm like, two of them cover up Heretics, and then three of them I moved to like the front religion table because –
Dude, there you go.
Because why not? I mean, they have people who it's their job to move stock back where it belongs. And so I was just, you know, keeping them employed.
So my impression is this John Acuff, he goes to Barnes & Noble and he has like a pen. He has like a pocket full of pens, right? And he gets back there in the religion section and he pulls his books off the shelf and sits down like cross-legged on the floor.
Like the little kid in the comic book section. That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, this is amazing. This blows my mind. And Pipe, it literally, all kidding aside, it strikes me as the saddest thing I've ever heard. You know?
If I walked in and say they had any of my books and I started signing, I would be terrified that an employee would come up and go, you know, you have to buy that now, right? Like, you don't get to write in that. And then I'd be like, no, I wrote this. And they'd be like, uh-huh, right. You know, BS, you didn't write, you know. It just strikes me as like – Well, first of all, I don't know about you. Like, I have never felt like my signature added a lick of value to a book.
Yeah, no, that's weird, man. It's just a weird thing. I mean, again, unless you're in that, like, Michael Jordan, Walter Payton echelon of celebrity, like, big whoop about your signature, you know?
I mean, if I give a book to somebody and I write a note in it that's like, hey, great to meet you, hope everything's, you know, whatever.
Then it's a gift
or like it's a comment about it was really great to get to know you or meet you or whatever. But like just signing and being like, here, my name, it's valuable. Yeah. Like, my name's already on the front of the book if there was value. I don't get the signature thing. And then to assume that like somebody's going to go, they're sitting at home, they're watching Netflix, eating Ben and Jerry's, and they see this tweet at like 8:49 and they're like, what? Barnes & Noble has signed copies of a book?
Wow. Of a John Acuff book.
Off with the bathrobe, on with the coat, and I'm going. It's hard for me to envision that. But my real fear is that I would get either forced to buy all of the copies of my own book or like just dragged out of the store. Like, get out of here, you vandal.
Dude, so can I tell you a funny story about this phenomenon? So 2006, my very first book, Facing Tyson, came out. And it was a big deal. Like, your first book is a big deal and you get excited about it. And it was back when like big bookstores were still a thing. So there were a lot of bookstores and a lot of the bookstores in our area carried the book. So we got a sitter for Tristan. He was young. And KK and I went out to like have dinner and just like go look at my book at a Barnes & Noble, you know, which is sad. But it was a thing that we did. So we're there. We're looking at the book. And a lady comes up, you know, middle-aged to older lady who is a friend of KK's mom, right? And she was doing this sort of nice, like kind of faux nice Southern thing of being like, oh, this is your book. That's so amazing. I'm so proud of you, blah, blah, blah. She's like, I need to get a copy of this for my husband. Now, this lady's husband worked in like Christian publishing, right? So he was in fact, I think maybe he owned like one of the kind of lesser publishing companies, right? So he was like the guy at one of these lesser publishing companies. And I told her, I said to the lady, I go, you know, this is a book about boxing and there's some rough language in here. You know, maybe your husband wouldn't love it. She's like, no, no, I insist. And she goes, she pulls a copy off the shelf and she goes, I need you to sign this for me because I'm going to buy it for my husband. And I'm like, you know, all right, if you insist, definitely. And so I asked her, I said, you know, can I write a little note to him? You know, how do I spell his name? Whatever. And she goes, no, just put your signature. I'm like, huh, that's kind of weird, but all right. So I have a really messy signature and I just signed it. I signed the book. I gave it to her, you know, said goodbye. I thought that was the end of it. Right. Fast forward to a couple of days later, we were having some college kids over to our house and one of them calls me ahead of time and he goes, dude, if I bring a copy of your book, will you sign it for me? And I'm like, of course, you know, that felt really cool, whatever. So he shows up to my house and he opens the book and he goes, I got the last copy of Barnes & Noble, but it looks like somebody had scribbled it. And I opened it up and it was the copy that I had signed for this lady. She took it, made like she was going to buy it, and then stuck it back on the shelf. And then this kid actually bought it.
That's brutal. Believe that? I mean, yeah.
Dude, it's so brutal.
I can believe it, but it's just heartless. Like, all that it would have taken is her being like, congratulations.
But she had to construct like this elaborate lie about buying the book.
Ugh.
And then she had to sneakily like place it back on the shelf without me seeing. And it turned into this whole like, you know, Mission Impossible thing for her.
Well, and here's the thing. If we play that out, you know, so she, I'm sure she walked away with the book so that you felt like she was definitely going to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what she did is she walked up to the counter to buy whatever else she had, you know, her chicken soup for the soul or whatever. And she's like, I'm going to get this for my husband. And then she casually opens it up and goes, what? Somebody scribbled in this. I don't want this. And she handed it to the cashier and is like, you can put this back on the shelf. And so she, I guarantee she carried that. She didn't put it back on the shelf herself. She stuck it somewhere in the store, like handed it back to him and was like, I don't want this.
Dude, that's so sneaky. That's so gangster. You know, I almost respect it, even though it hurts me.
Have you ever asked somebody for, you know, who have you asked for autographs? Let's put it that way.
Oh, dude. So when I was a little kid, the Indianapolis Colts would have their training camp in Anderson.
That's right.
Anderson
you were a ball boy for them, right?
Dude, I was a ball boy in high school, but like way beyond that, like when I was a little, like a little kid, like in middle school, you know, I would bring like a notepad and like get their autographs, you know what I mean, as they're walking off the field. So I got like, I don't know, these names aren't going to mean anything to you, but like Gary Hogaboom and like Randy McMillan.
I know
and
those names.
Like Jack Trudeau, you know, all these guys that used to play for the Colts back in the day. And that was really exciting. But starting, dude, starting probably my freshman year of high school, I think I stopped getting autographs. You know what I mean? I started thinking of myself as an athlete, and that made it like less of a thing for me to go and like get somebody's autograph. But I don't know that I've ever had anybody sign a book. Like, if I've, I don't think I've ever been like, you know, here, I'd love to have you sign my book. You know what I mean? Well,
I don't think I've ever asked anybody for an autograph. I also don't ask people for photos. So the other day I was walking down one of the main streets in Nashville, Broadway, and and I, Chris Rock walked 2 feet away from me.
Chris Rock
has been my favorite comedian since I was about 15 or 16 years old. The thing is, I saw out of the corner of my eye him taking a selfie with some other guy. Like, some guy had flagged him down and been like, oh my gosh, can we get a selfie? And Chris walks away. He puts his sunglasses on and just sort of has that, like, the million-mile stare. And I look directly at him. Like, at the very least, I'm going to nod and say hi. Doesn't even acknowledge me. Just walks on by, which I was him, I would do the exact same thing. So I'm not – but I was like, if I ask him for a picture, I'm going to annoy the crap out of him.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't regret not asking. So here's the thing. I want the picture, but I don't want to ask him for the picture.
Yes.
So I would love to have a picture of me and Chris Rock or any number of other famous people, but I will never, ever ask somebody for that.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No, I know it, man. And one of my favorite things – so I have friends who get these celebrity pictures. Uh-huh. And one of my favorite things is looking at the face of the celebrity and trying to ascertain how, like, disgusted or disconnected. Like, there's nothing warm. There's nothing intimate about these pictures. No. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. And you know, the self-aware ones are like, you know, they sort of recognize they're doing somebody a favor. But it's a pretty cheap favor because, like, the person doesn't actually get anything out of it other than a false sense of self-importance.
Right.
But then there's some who it's just an annoyance to. The weirdest thing to me is being around people who offer to take a picture. Like, they're the famous person. Yes. They're like, well, why don't we get a picture together? And part of me –
Like, do you want a picture?
Part of me wants to be the cool guy who's like, nah, man, I'm good. You know?
Dude, I used to know a guy. I'm not going to say who it is. He's a former pro athlete who would travel. He would, like, carry around glossies of himself.
Yeah.
Like, in a little briefcase. which, like, given – here's the thing. I respect all athletes, right? And especially athletes in like violent sports where you put your body on the line. Right. So to some degree, like anything this guy wants to do, it's totally fine by me. But I kind of couldn't believe it. I was shocked, you know,
It's
that he would do that.
So and the funniest thing for me is when it's like it's pastors, you know, so I go to these pastors conferences sometimes and there's some big name guys. Like some of the biggest name guys in evangelical, and I'll cross paths with them in some context. And one or two of them have been like, well, why don't we get a picture? I'm like, well, did you want the picture? Because I don't.
Do you want this for your collection? You want a picture of Barnabas Piper?
They want it on my phone. I'm like, well, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't care. Like that's
– Dude, that's so weird. It's so presumptuous.
I'm assuming that what they've done is they realize more people want a picture than not, and most people are too nervous to ask.
Yeah,
In my case, it's more like I'm too nervous to say I don't care.
Yeah,
and so yes, I'll take the picture with you, but I don't know.
But I'm not gonna.
I'm never gonna post it anywhere. Like it's not. It has no value to me.
Exactly, dude. I wonder what John Acuff feels like when he's signing all those books. Like, I wonder what's in his heart at that moment. Like, what his feeling is. You know,
Is
it a thrill? Is it like, man, I've arrived. Look at all these John Acuff books. Or is it like, I got to hurry up and do this before somebody.
Is it philanthropic? Like man, I'm being so good. I'm being so good to the potential readers of this book.
Right. I'm adding value to this book. I don't know.
My thought, I would be purely terrified if I was doing that. Just 100% and complete. Like I'm going to get dragged out of this store.
I'd be embarrassed. That's what would happen to me. Like something would go wrong for me. Like I would do it. I'd work up the courage to do it. And I'd even feel like a little bit excited about it. And then, you know, I'd get thrown out or it'd go wrong somehow. Or like somebody who I really respected would see me doing it and I'd feel sheepish. You know what
have
I mean?
You ever wanted to sign like somebody else's books? Like going to Barnes & Noble and be like, well, I'm going to sign all of Tim Keller's books.
Dude, that would be super funny. That would be really funny.
That's more my
And then you could tweet out, like, Prodigal Gods, signed by Ted Pluck.
Or just tweet out, just the vague tweet of like, hey, 9 signed copies of Prodigal God at X and such.
Exactly.
Didn't say who it was signed by. They're just signed.
Exactly. Signed by a much lesser evangelical author.
A decreased value.
Dude, that's almost like a modern art installation. To like to go around and like punk rockishly like sign other authors' books, you know? Maybe I'll start doing that.
I should just start offering when I'm places like, hey, do you want me to sign that? You know, and somebody's so next time I go to a pastor's conference, I'm gonna be at the Gospel Coalition in April. As people walk around the bookstore, I should just walk them and be like, hey, have you read that book by Keller? I heard it's really good. I'll sign it for you.
I'll sign it for you. Yeah. Would you like me to sign it for you? Dude, I love it. So let's stay on this kind of topic of celebrities. So in keeping with our celebrity thing,
yes.
maybe this is the celebrity episode. I don't know.
So many famous people.
Somebody put it out on Twitter. They wanted to know who our celebrity man crushes were. And I feel like this is a conversation that we've sort of had before, but I never get tired of it.
No.
To be honest. And I want to make clear this is not a sexual thing.
Right.
How would you define man crush, Pipe? And then I'm going to try to define it. We're men of letters.
I think
we should be able to do this.
I think the short version is like these are people about whom the sentence could be said, women want to be with this person, men want to be this person. Mm. And we wholeheartedly want, like we wish with every ounce of our being to be as cool or as have the charisma or whatever of these names we are about to offer.
Yeah, like I would be this person. I would trade places with
If it. I could be as cool as anyone in the world, it would be this person. Which is also important because this is a celebrity man crush. This is not the same thing as a celebrity crush. That's an entirely different conversation that's probably much, much more awkward.
That's a different episode. Right. Yeah. And that's probably an episode that we can't do.
Right. And probably for the best, you know.
And probably for the best, but we can't
devolves quickly.
This. And we are doing this. So, Pipe, I want to hear some of your celebrity man crushes. I'm going to say you don't have to limit it to one because I'll be honest with you, I've got several, and we're going to talk about them all. But I want to hear some of yours.
Okay. Well, the first and foremost, I mean, this was an immediate thing when I saw this question. There was no hesitation. Yeah. It is
didn't have to think about it at all.
It is, and as far as I know, will always be Idris Elba.
Oh, interesting, man. Suss that out.
So I was not familiar with Idris Elba until I watched The Wire a few years ago.
Okay.
He plays a character named Stringer Bell, and he's the second best actor in the show.
Okay.
Who's
the first
Michael, was it Michael K. Williams? The guy who plays Omar in the show is, that character is the best. I don't want to say one's a better actor than the other. The character Omar is the money, but...
Yeah.
But Idris Elba, so then he was in the show Luther, and then he played the big guy who carries the sword in Thor, you know, who guards the whatever thing that sends people back and forth from Asgard to Earth. You know, my Marvel nerd friends will get mad that I can't remember all the names. And
dude, I'm looking at Idris Elba here. This is a good looking guy.
Yeah, he is smooth. He is suave.
Yeah.
He's got a voice. He's British too. So he's got like the accent, but he can play the cool American guy, or he can play the brilliant British guy, or the suave guy. He ought to be the next James Bond. This is my proposal for next James Bond, because he's tough as nails.
Dude, he looks shredded too, man. He's rocked up.
He's British. He has had a music career, so he's a man of many talents.
My goodness.
Yeah, if I could be a person in the world, it would be Idris Elba. Straight up.
Man,
no questions asked. That was my first go-to on this.
That's not a bad one at all. Maybe we can kind of go back and forth here on this. You know, for me, my go-to on this question, and we'll get more nuanced as we bounce it back and forth. And I want to kind of go genre man crushes here too.
Okay.
So you kind of did your actor. I'll do an actor. And then maybe we'll go to sports or music or whatever. But my actor one, man, is Brad Pitt. I've always been a Brad Pitt guy. In that weird way that people are compelling. I mean, look, Brad Pitt's super good looking.
Mm-hmm.
But there were some movies that came out in the 90s that really sort of showcase the fact that he can really act as well.
Yeah, he's had some real high highs as just like as a performer, not just being a hot dude.
Yeah, he's had some really high highs as a performer. I mean, 12 Monkeys was amazing. Yep. Legends of the Fall was
incredible.
Dude, it's so good. And I have this argument like weekly with my students. My students hate that movie, the ones that have seen it. They think it's depressing, but I think it's one of the most beautiful.
It is depressing, but
yeah. In the best possible way.
Yeah, it's like brilliantly depressing. I don't know.
It's brilliantly depressing. There is a redemptive element to it at the end, which I'm not going to talk about because I would give the whole thing away. But yeah, there's some just achingly sad stuff that happens in that movie, but very redemptive stuff at the end. But dude, and I got to tell you, 100% straight man here talking. But when Brad Pitt comes like around the corner on that horse in the suit and the tie and the vest and the long hair and like the scruffy beard.
Yes.
Judas Priest, that's a good looking dude. Right.
Yeah, and you know, not like to make you swoon, but just like a you can't even hate that dude for how much better looking than you he is.
I can't hate the dude. You know, when I think in my 20s, I probably kind of like tried to hate him. But then I just gave myself over.
Just give up. Just appreciate it.
Just appreciate it. Just enjoy it. Don't fight it. Just enjoy it. Okay, so Fight Club, obviously a great Brad Pitt. Even the cheesy ones, even like the Ocean's movies, I think he's great in those.
Yeah, because that just showcases his ability to sort of be like the disaffected, pithy guy, which is a very different space. Like Legends of the Fall is whatever is not disaffected or pithy, so... Very different.
Dude, the Ocean's movies, he's always like just like eating a sandwich or like drinking a bottle of water in those movies.
I think he's eating in every scene in those movies.
Dude, he's a guy who looks great eating a sandwich, you know? I wish that could be said of me. I dream of that, you know? I'm not that guy. And the other thing is Brad Pitt can do long hair, he can do short hair, you know? You buzz it off, it looks good. You let it go long, it looks good. You know, there's not a weakness there. For me with Brad Pitt. So I want to throw it back to you, Pipe. We've each done actors. Do you have another in a different category?
Since Ronnie couldn't join us for this, I feel like maybe we need to pick his actor too.
Ooh.
I mean, I guess the question is which male shows up in the most Hallmark movies?
Yeah. Wow. This is an interesting one, man. Who would it be? Who would it be for Ron Martin?
It's got to be a little quirky. I feel like got to be a little offbeat. I don't know. I'm.
Dude, Ron is a complicated character in that he would be loath, I think, to even admit that he has a man crush. You know what I mean? Because it would be a level of vulnerability that I think I've never seen him get to.
Yeah.
You know, admitting that there's another performer that he admires.
I feel like Hugh Grant is. Ooh. Borderline for this, like it's there because Ronnie's not going to be somebody like me who's just straight up yes, I wish I could be Idris Elba, but he's going to talk there are things about Hugh Grant that and I think that would be my guess in large part because of Love Actually.
Love Actually.
That's my guess for that's my guess for Ron. We can run these by him later and see if we guess right. Do you have any names come to mind for you?
Dude, but the other thing on the Hugh Grant tip that I think makes it a strong contender for Ron is Notting Hill.
Yes.
Like, I'm sure he's a fan of the movie Notting Hill. Great romantic comedy. Hugh Grant is the main guy, runs a little bookshop. I don't know. Actor-wise, I'm thinking maybe George Clooney. I feel like I've heard him mention Clooney. You know, Clooney and Ron have kind of similar coloring. You know, they're both dark-haired guys. Mm-hmm. I think you know, Ronnie could see himself as sort of a poor man's George Clooney, if you will.
And the thing is, and you can see it a little bit as Ronnie sort of becomes fully like the, you know, the salt and pepper beard and the neatly coiffed hair, and like everything is pulled together and smooth and not high highs, not low lows. It's very Clooney-ish.
Pipe, let me ask you something vis-a-vis appearance. When I first met Ron, I'm pretty sure he colored his hair. You know what I mean? Like he was sort of, and Ronnie is a good looking man. Let me just say that. Just get that out in the open. No qualms about saying that. We're good friends. We can say that about one another. But you know, and he's talked on this program about how hard aging is for him, and aging is hard for me too. But like, it's never ever occurred to me to color my hair. But I think he used to color his hair. I don't know. I don't want to impugn him falsely by saying that. But I like where I was going with that is I like how in, you know, in the last year or two, he's really embraced just the whole like salt and pepper beard and the aging thing and, you know, just own it.
Yeah. And it suits him. Like it's got some gravitas to it, but it's not like
it's distinguished,
but he styles it in such a way that he doesn't look like he's trying to like, you know, he's not, he doesn't have like the little academic goatee or like the creepy hipster mustache. It's just a really well-groomed beard. And it almost sounds like I have a man crush on Ronnie right now, but I'm just, I'm admiring his transition from CCM artist several years ago. If you go back and look at the videos that we're not supposed to talk about from his Joy Electric days to where he's at now, I mean, it is a full transformation.
Well, Pipe, let's use that as a segue. Let's talk about music.
All right.
Do you have a music industry man crush?
Oh, absolutely. Without question. It's Harry Connick Jr.
Oh, fascinating.
And
suss that
so,
out. Great looking guy, by the way.
Yeah.
And handsome gentleman.
I admire any man who looks better with age. You know, and he was a handsome devil at like 25, kind of like Brad.
Absolutely.
I'd say Brad Pitt's in the same category. But, you know.
Dude, nobody wore a t-shirt like Harry Connick Jr. in the 90s. He would always wear like just a white t-shirt and like jeans, and he'd be crooning. And you didn't know if the video was set in like 1942 or 1992, but it didn't matter.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
He could have easily had like a pack of cigarettes rolled up in his sleeve and it been from like the 50s or something. But
absolutely.
So Harry Connick Jr. is the artist that made me fall in love with jazz. I grew up with like my parents didn't listen to much music, so my musical influences were whatever I chose to like. And somebody was playing this jazz. I think it was a cassette at the time in their car. And I was like, "What is this? I like this." And they're like, "This is a guy named Harry Connick Jr. He's 11 years old, or the album was his album 11. So I'm sure he wasn't 11 at that point."
Yeah.
And I proceeded to spend all of my income on Harry Connick Jr. albums for like 10 years. So I bought I bought everything that he put out between 11 and like 4 years ago.
Dude, can I ask you a weird kind of nuanced question on that? Did owning all those Harry Connick records, like did it help you with women? Did it help? How did women take that? You know what I mean?
You know, I don't think I was confident enough because I wasn't a musician, so I couldn't like go sing a Harry Connick Jr. song for somebody. I don't know. I just loved his music, and especially his earlier stuff where he was like jazz trio stuff and some of those things. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it helped me with women at no fault of his. Let's be very clear about this.
He could have helped you with women. He could have been your wingman without even knowing.
I wasn't ready to be helped. Let's put it that way.
Dude, the reason I asked that, man, I was in a context with some students recently where this guy, this dude, the student was clearly invoking Michael Bublé as a means of like getting this girl to like
him. Michael Bublé wishes he could be as cool as Harry Connick Jr. He's the half-baked Harry Connick Jr.
He's poor man's Harry Connick Jr. There's nothing remarkable to me about Michael Bublé.
Yeah, he's a
nothing that puts him on that Harry Connick level.
No, he's just he's a crooner who came along at a time when people were more inclined to like crooning, but as a musician, it's not even remotely close. Like Harry Connick Jr. is a world class jazz piano player, phenomenal, and. Mm. Also arranger of things, and he's an actor, and he's one of those guys who you should hate because he's good at everything, but he's so dang likable that you're just like, no, I just want to be his buddy. Like, I just wish I could hang out and live. I will live in the wake of Harry Connick Jr. because he's awesome.
Don't you wish we could hang out with Harry?
Yes.
Listen, Harry, if you're listening, if you're a fan of the Happy Rant, and you probably are, let's hang out. We'll come to you.
Either. Yeah, I wish I could go to New Orleans and just like spend a night like popping from jazz club to jazz club with Harry Connick Jr. I can't think of a better way to just sort of spend a day. That sounds amazing.
Wouldn't that be amazing? Let's make that happen, man. Let's use our considerable celebrity, the power of the liberal media that we have here at our fingertips, as radio professionals, and let's make this happen. So, I have a couple of music man crushes, man, and you're gonna. I'm sharing these, Pipe, only because I feel comfortable with you and I feel like you're not going to laugh at me.
This is a safe space. So
I feel like it is a safe space. Shared a lot.
You can be authentic here.
So again, you got to put yourself in the shoes of of 1990s Ted Pluck okay. and what I liked back then. But one of my Music Man crushes exists to this day. Zach De La Rocha from Rage Against the Machine. Do you know this guy?
Not by name. I know Rage. That was, you know.
Dude, look him up. Look him up.
I can't even spell that. Is it Zach with a C-H? Is it Zach?
C-H. It's Zach De La, D-E-L-A, and then Rocha, R-O-C-H-A. All right,
looking up his Wikipedia page. Here we go. Ooh, look at that hair. He's got the white guy fro.
Yes. He was ambiguously ethnic, right? Yep. Like you don't know exactly like what you're dealing with there ethnicity wise, but so to me, here's the thing: here's a guy in Zach De La Rocha who's not in any way conventionally handsome. Like Brad Pitt, we can all agree is conventionally handsome.
And if you don't think so, you're an idiot. Like that's
Harry Connick Jr. is conventionally handsome. He's a handsome dude.
Yes.
I mean, you show Harry Connick Jr.'s picture to a room full of women, they're going to agree that he's handsome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Zach De La Rocha, not so much, except that. Dude, this guy just had like unreal charisma, like off the charts, crazy charisma in the 90s. And that was a decade where it was like okay to be super earnest and passionate. And they would have these shows, man, where like entire arenas were like pumping their fist in unison. And this guy was getting the crowd whipped up. And I was just so into that, man. I was incredibly into that. In the 90s with Zach Dylan.
Well, and Rage Against the Machine was a, like, they were a seminal band for, like, the, I'd say, like, the older millennials and then also down to Gen X. Like, just that pure, like, expression of aggressiveness.
Yes.
I don't want to call it anger, but it was like aggression. Just that.
Dude, it was very aggressive music. It was very, like, passionate. Ernest. I was really into Zach De La Rocha. The other one, this is like 1 and 1A for music for me. My other music man crush from the 90s was Adam Duritz from the Counting Crows.
Yes.
You remember Adam Duritz?
Oh, I listened to the Counting Crows probably like every other week. I listened to them pretty regularly. Like they're still great.
Dude, they're still great. I love the Counting Crows. I love everything they've done. Was a huge Counting Crows and Adam Duritz fan. Here's another guy, though, who I don't think we would call him conventionally handsome, dude. Except that this guy, man, this freaking guy, this guy dated like every hot celebrity chick in the 90s. And to this day, I don't know how he pulled it off. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, because musicians are, you know, that's a different sort of dudes. Like for some reason, writing words and singing words don't have the same effect on people.
No, that's true, man. Being a writer, it's not the same. You
yeah,
know?
Usually you're judged fairly harshly for that. Whereas if you can sing words, all judgment just words, washes man. Away.
The world is your oyster, right. You know? The world is your oyster. Dude, when I was a glum, morose sophomore at Taylor University, I lived off campus for a semester, but my friend Bernie lived on campus, and he would let me, like, he gave me like a key to his dorm room so I could hang out and you know, not have to like go to my car or whatever. And he had the record August and Everything After by the Counting Crows.
So good.
And it was my first entree into the Counting Crows. And dude, I swear to gosh, I would listen to that thing on repeat like day after day after day. It was such a seminal, like huge record for me back in the day.
Yeah, it's there's no weak points in it.
No, definitely not.
Well, see, and that's one that, you know, they were popular at their peak probably before I was of quote unquote the right age to really enjoy their mm-hmm. music. But mm-hmm. I have three older brothers, and my oldest brother was a Counting Crows fan for a few years. And so I was influenced because he thought they were good and I thought he was cool. So therefore I became a fan at like 10 and am now a fan who actually can enjoy their music more now because I'm not 10 anymore.
Dude, so tough question. We ask the tough questions on this program. And this would be hard for Ronnie because he is a musician. Uh-huh. Do you think he has any music man crushes?
Ooh. He has to because, I mean, like you and I are writers. And I guarantee there are writers that were like, oh, I just wish I could write like that person.
Oh, yeah.
Like it kills us that we can't, or we try really hard to, and he has to have that. But I think admitting it is different because it's a performance art, not you know. And so I don't know if he does. I, I also,
dude, and there's a sense.
The thing is,
which,
I don't. The other
like,
thing is, to be fair, I don't totally know the world of Ronnie's music very well. So his musical influences are probably like 72 people I've never heard of.
Dude, I feel like one would be like Ian Curtis from Joy Division. You know, kind of mopey, kind of like, you know, that hollowed out, like bags under your eyes, skinny, like arty, like smoking a cigarette kind of guy. You know,
I could see that.
Also, I think Ronnie was influenced by their music and by that whole, you know, kind of movement. So I think if I had to venture a guess, it would be someone like that. Pipe, let me give you one last category, one last question on man crushes. Sports. Mm. Do you have an athletics man crush?
See, this is the hardest one for me because I find athletes to be the least interesting people most of the time.
No, I agree. And so, I agree. This is one that you have to think hard on.
The interesting athletes are usually the ones who are not good athletes. Mm-hmm. You know, you get like Brian Scalabrine, who is like the 14th man on various NBA playoff teams. Yeah. But that's why he was interesting, because he wasn't any good. So he would, you know, read books and be funny and whatever else. But man, I don't know. Like there are athletes at various points who have clearly been my favorite. Like Kevin Garnett is probably my favorite athlete ever, but I wouldn't I wouldn't want to hang out with him. I don't know that he's terribly likable.
Exactly. Yeah. So dude, that's interesting.
I don't come up with much in the sports world. I'm sure that there's got to be a name out there, but I'm having a hard time pulling it from the ether.
Dude, wanting to hang out is an important part of this. What about Robert Smith from the old Vikings? You know, he's a smart guy. He's got a doctorate, I think.
He's a little he's too smart, though. I feel like if I wanted an intelligent perspective on something, he's clearly brilliant. But he doesn't look like much fun.
No, I know it, man.
Like, I don't.
Who would be fun from those old Viking teams?
The old Viking teams. Oh, you know what? John Randall. Because
that
guy's crazy. Like he's the kind of guy. It's like you get in a car with John Randall. I mean, it's like a reality TV show. You don't know what's going to happen. Like you might end up in a brawl in an alley. You might like go to the opera. You might like paint your face and run around in the woods at a loincloth.
You know, you don't know what's going on.
You could lose all your money at a backroom card game and then get chased by Tommy gun toting thugs. Like literally anything could happen with him. And he would laugh at all of it. Just raucous laughter because I think he's borderline insane. But it's
dude, you know what else I kind of liked from those old Viking teams? This guy was sort of like white guy wannabe John Randall. It was Chris Hovind. Remember Chris
Hovind? I think he's come up on the pod before. He was the first guy who ever made me think that like the barbed wire tattoo might be cool.
Dude, exactly. He made the barbed wire tattoo cool for a minute, man. For just a short time.
He followed John Randall. Like he was supposed to be the Randall replacement.
He was the white John Randall, and he would paint his face in the same fashion. And he was good. He was a good player. You know, no disrespect to Chris Hovind.
So I think I wouldn't call him a man crush, but he's like Randall's close to like the most interesting man in the world kind of guy. Like he's he just kind of crazy.
Yeah.
What's your sports poll?
I've got a few, but I'm with you, Pipe. The hangout factor was what really got me, because everybody that I've mentioned thus far, Brad Pitt, Zach De La Rocha, Adam Duritz, I would totally want to hang with these guys. Like it would be a good hang. It would be fun. But sports, man, it's tough. So there was a guy, I'm going purely off appearances now and back to the barbed wire tattoo thing for me. My barbed wire tattoo guy in the 90s was this linebacker. He played for Ohio State. His name was Andy Katzenmark.
Yes.
You remember this guy?
He was so good.
Dude, he was so freaking good as a college linebacker. He was this big, like rocked up white dude. He wore the huge neck roll. Like he was everything I wanted to be as a player. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Including like even the fashion, like the way he wore the uniform, how it looked, man, it was perfect. And I don't know anything about him. I don't know if he would be fun to hang out with at all, but that was definitely one from the 90s. And now, I'm with you, man. I have trouble like really identifying. One guy who I'm kind of fascinated with from the NBA is Boris Diaw.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good one. I heard an interview with him recently. He's a funny dude who's just – he's a total free spirit.
He's super funny. He doesn't warm up with a team. He like drinks espresso in the locker room to warm up.
And he's perpetually 25 pounds overweight.
dude, I know I love this guy. He's fat. Like, he looks like me. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. It, even,
like, if he showed up and played intramurals with me, like, yeah. Like it wouldn't be weird.
But he's,
you know?
But he's a savant, too. Like, he's a wizard on the basketball court.
Oh, he's great. Yeah. He passes the basketball. He
you
can
know
shoot.
What? Okay. Most – You mentioned him and it reminded me, European basketball players as a whole are the closest we get to interesting athletes. Dirk Nowitzki, he strikes me as a dude who would be a great hang.
Dude, these guys, you're right. You're so right. I'm glad you made that point because these guys, they all have like an active, like lively imagination. They have a life of the mind. Like, you know, American athletes, like they go on the road and like, I don't know, they get wasted and they go to strip clubs and I don't know, these European guys, they're like, I don't know, setting up a telescope and like looking at the moon.
Yeah, or like,
you know,
when they go to play the Golden State Warriors or whatever, they like take a trip and they're like, oh, I got an off day. I'm going to go to Napa Valley and like learn about wineries. And
dude, yeah, I'm going to go to Napa
I'm
Valley.
I'm going to go to the theater when I'm in New York and I'm going to
take like a wine tasting class. And oh, yeah, I mean, these guys are, they're Renaissance men.
And
know?
So, I think Boris is a great call. Dirk. I'm not a big enough fan of his to say he's a man crush, but like if he's on the short list of athletes, I'm like, oh, he'd be fun. Like I could travel with that guy for a week and have a great time.
Dude, see, and for me, it's not like a looks thing with Boris Diaw. Like if Boris Diaw had the looks.
No, it's the fact that he looks like one of us, except that he's 6'8".
The fact that he looks like one of us, it makes him accessible, you know? But it's definitely not a looks thing. Well, dude, this has been very illuminating. Oh, wait, before we move on, who's Ronnie's sports man crush?
Oh, goodness. Who's that Pirates third baseman he always talks about? He only knows like two athletes, so.
Dude, he knows Kent Culvey and he knows the Penguin, Ron Say, from the Dodgers.
I think it's Ron Say because the other one he laughs about, but Ron Say, there's always a touch of reverence in his voice.
Dude, there's a touch of reverence. There's absolute reverence for the Penguin. Ron Say, if you're listening, and I know you are, I know you're a listener to the program. If the Penguin, Ron Say, or Boris Diaw, or Brad Pitt, Zach De La Rosa, anybody we've mentioned, Harry Connick Jr. If you want to hang out, we are down. We'll drive to you. We'll pay.
For John Randall. That one is a little bit frightening.
Dude, that one is frightening. I don't know if I'm hanging with John Randall.
He's,
Andy Katzenmoyer, though? I would hang with Andy Katzenmoyer. I don't know what he's doing now. But
I bet he strikes me as the type who you'd have to like drive to the middle of Ohio and you'd find him like on his John Deere tractor tilling his, you know, his 40 acres or whatever. You know, it's...
Dude, that'd be okay.
I wouldn't be surprised at that.
We could go eat like at a diner, you know? And people would know him, but not because of the football.
That's right. They'd be like, oh, that's Andy Kay. He's the potato farmer.
Exactly, man. I love it. Pike, this has been very illuminating, man. We've done what we always do in this program. We've wandered to and fro. We've talked a little sports, which is a thing that we don't necessarily feel the freedom to do with Ron in the studio. Man, I enjoyed our sports app too, and I think people.
Yeah,
we got
some good feedback on that one where people, you know, they say keep it coming. So we'll have to do another special sports app at some point.
Dude, we'll do it. We'll do a little NFL draft app. Maybe we'll do something on I don't know the post Super Bowl recap. We'll do something for
people. Sure.
But thank you for listening to the program. We do this all for you. We do it all for the listeners. Even though you know you take away all the money and all the fame, and we're just regular guys. You know,
kind of like Boris Diaw, except shorter.
We're like Boris Diaw. We're drinking our espressos to get warmed up for the show, and then we just go out and we do work. You know, we're lunch pail guys, Pike.
That we are.
We're lunch pail guys. We're gym rats. We're studio rats, as it
yes.
were. In the parlance of the radio business. So we have wandered to and fro. We thank you for listening. Until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. Resonate has helped us with our editing and mastering pretty much from the beginning of the podcast. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Mark and Jake do a fantastic and timely job with all sorts of podcast services. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast.
Everyone wants to change the world. Capital Ministries is doing just that, one heart at a time, by creating disciples of Jesus Christ among political leaders in the U.S. and foreign nations. For more than 25 years, founder Ralph Drollinger has written Bible studies specifically for public servants. Study along with us and learn what the Bible says about capitalism, communism, abortion, same-sex marriage, and other contemporary issues. Subscribe and follow us at lifeaudio.com or search Capital Ministries on your favorite podcast platform.